Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TIC and Light 100.5 WRCH. Our guest this morning is the Republican State Senate leader, Stephen Harding of Brookfield. We're going to be talking about his transition from being a freshman state senator to the caucus's new leader. And we're also going to get his take on a number of issues facing the Senate this session and this election cycle. Good morning, Senator. Welcome to the program.
Morgan, thank you for having me. It's good to be on.
Well, you have definitely had a busy few days. Let's just start from the beginning. Were you surprised at everything that changed and transitioned and how you took on this role so quickly?
Yeah, it was certainly a transition and was somewhat of a significant surprise on Friday. So it's been a couple of days, but I really want to thank, you know, Senator Kelly for his leadership of this caucus. He's worked very hard for this caucus. And the transition was very amicable and positive, and it really was a collaboration of the caucus and with myself and Senator Kelly. So for the past four or five days where I've been fortunate enough to be the leader of the caucus, it's been getting everything in place and moving forward and advancing on a lot of the efforts that Senator Kelly worked very hard on.
Now, you're not necessarily new to the General Assembly and legal affairs, but you are new to the Senate. And so how have you been navigating all of this?
Well, you hit on a key point. So I am certainly new to the Senate, but I was state representative prior to getting elected to the Senate the last election cycle. So although I've only had one term, or I'm serving technically in my first term here in the state Senate, I was previously in the House for almost a decade. I know how the building operates. I know the committee process. I know the floor process once a bill gets to the floor, and the process by negotiating and working through bills, voting on them, advocating against certain measures that our caucus finds to be harmful to the state, advocating for measures that would be helpful for our constituents, in our opinion. So the process is very similar, although obviously each chamber has its unique rules and perspectives on issues. The process very much remains the same. So it's adapting and building on what I've learned in the House and also what I've learned in my first term here as a senator.
I've heard that in the last few days you've mentioned that you've wanted to follow the footsteps of Senator Kevin Kelly's leadership, who has held that leadership position now for a few years up until last Friday, but that you also want to take Senate Republicans in a fresh direction. So how are you going to combine those two new approaches?
Well, I think every leader is going to have a different style. And so as a new leader, I'll have some different styles. In terms of, you know, rolling certain policies out, in terms of communicating with caucus members on certain issues and policies. So every leader is unique in that regard. But for the most part, it's very much advancing on the efforts of Senator Kelly and working aggressively to advance the causes that he began. I think the Senate Republican Caucus has done a great job under Kevin Kelly's leadership in regards to stopping the EV mandate from moving forward. That was basically a banner. Carbon emission vehicles being sold here in the state by 2035, a ban that had zero plan. There was no policy that was being implemented to take on the infrastructure for that. There was no policies being implemented to supplement the extreme cost it would cost consumers not only to purchase these vehicles, but also to supplement the high utility rates they would see, the increase in utility rates from implementing a measure like this. So, you know, these are all efforts that Senator Kelly has began. And in my role, I'm looking at those efforts, seeing his leadership skills to get us to the point where we were successful in these efforts, and ultimately advancing on those efforts. That's really my goal right now, and doing it in a communicative manner with my fellow caucus members.
Senator Kelly was very good at making counterproposals to try to jumpstart negotiations, often on controversial or difficult legislation. And I'm sure that you've learned a lot about that from him and from your fellow Republican lawmakers. And so is that something that you're looking to continue in your leadership, the not so much arguing and disagreeing, but trying to reach a solution?
100%. I mean, Senator Kelly was excellent, was a master, and still is a master at finding agreement on some issues where it seems like agreement could not be found. And so that's why it's critically important that Senator Kelly is absolutely still going to remain a leader of this caucus, particularly in that regard. And so, you know, I've spoken with him continuously throughout this transition process. I'm going to continue to speak with him, continue to take his advice. You know, continue to look to him as a mentor. And in one of those aspects is just what you mentioned is advancing on his strong efforts to find unique perspectives in terms of agreement on so many issues. And, you know, as part of being in the minority here in the state Senate, and the state house for that measure, you know, in regards to advancing causes, there has to be agreement that's met. There has to be bipartisanship. There has to be a reach across the aisle to make sure that we can get measures passed or even prevent some bad measures from being pushed forward and coming to an agreement on both sides. So, you know, Senator Kelly is somebody that has been uniquely qualified at doing that. He's still going to be working very hard for this caucus, working very hard for this district, and that's one of the measures in which I will be taking his advice every step of the way when it comes down to working with the leadership from the other side of the aisle in regards to advancing unique ways in which we can come to agreement.
I'm talking this morning on Face Connecticut with Republican Senate Leader Stephen Harding of Brookfield, and you have a huge district, so this is a big responsibility managing your district, which has a number of towns in northwestern Connecticut and western Connecticut in general, and also leading now the Senate. So how are you going to work both of those?
Yeah, it's a lot of caffeine, Morgan, so that's that's one thing. But and I'm, you know, I'm young. I'm in my mid-30s. I'm 36. So I'm at a time in my life where I certainly am able to, you know, stay up some late hours and, you know, navigate being present in all 18 towns in my district, as well as being present and available in Hartford as well. And I think the biggest thing is you know, navigating that this time of year, particularly when we're in session. As you know, Morgan, you know, generally we're in short years, like we're in a short year, session year now. We're in from about the beginning of February to the beginning of May. But that's really the period where, you know, I look to be here nearly on a daily basis up here in Hartford. And at nighttime, going to different events back home in the 30th District. And as we end the session, which is in early May, you know, it becomes a little easier to navigate both. There's not as much going on up in Hartford at that time of year. So obviously I'll spend a lot of time in the 30th district. So, you know, the one thing is I need to, you know, I always understand that the my responsibilities in terms of representing the caucus, advocating for our interests, are certainly here in Hartford. But at the end of the day, I always understand that the people of the 30th district are the individuals, the neighbors that elect me to come up here and represent them. And so I'm looking forward to navigating both. I'm excited. I have a lot of energy, and I'm going to utilize that energy to be both in the district and in Hartford representing the people of the 30th District and representing the Senate Republican Caucus.
Well, let's dig into some of the issues that you have the energy to tackle, because there are a number of them just this year alone, which, again, as you mentioned, is the shorter of the two legislative session cycles. So one of the issues is obviously adjusting the already in-place budget. There are fiscal guardrails, and you said that you've agreed with Governor Lamont in kind of a bipartisan move here to not deviate too far away from the fiscal guardrails. So could you explain how these budget adjustments are going to look, especially if you're following those guardrails?
Right. So, you know, you're absolutely right. And that is one of the leverage points, I think, where reaching across the aisle or working in collaboration as a minority caucus in Hartford, where you can really advance on these efforts. And so that is one of them. We have a governor in Governor Lamont that is strongly believes in maintaining these fiscal guardrails, which you know, maintains spending, maintains bonding, most importantly, maintains the volatility cap as well when it comes down to revenue. And I think the volatility cap is one of the biggest aspects of the fiscal guardrails that we put in place in 2017. The volatility cap is pretty much the sole reason as to why we have $4 billion in reserves, and we've paid record debt obligations down and other long-term debt obligations down. If not for that volatility cap, we probably would not have been able to do any of that. And so those measures have put us fiscally and economically in a really, really great place, or a positive place, far better than the way we were 4 or 5 years ago. So the thought process by some of the majority to strip those measures, to simply spend more money, to bond more money, to take revenue that is volatile and to utilize it in other areas, I just think is absolutely fiscally irresponsible. And I think the governor believes in the same thing. So I think if we as a Senate Republican caucus, I think the House Republican caucus is in agreement on this as well, can collaborate with the governor's office to push back on many in the majority that want to move back from these measures, I think we can see a really successful resolution for our caucuses and ultimately for the people of the state of Connecticut. Our economic health, as I said, has improved significantly. Taking steps to step back from the measures that have led us to that point, I just think is illogical and really irresponsible to the constituencies that we've been fortunate enough to represent.
Everybody wants money, and everybody wants a lot of it. And this really isn't the year where things generally get major increases or even decreases. And so how do you guys manage budget requests?
A lot of it has always been prioritizing, and I think it still is. You look at some of the bureaucracy in the state of Connecticut and some agreements that are currently being discussed with the governor's office right now, with some of the collectively bargained units that are under negotiation at the moment. I think, you know, one of the things that we need to absolutely do in that regard is make sure that the governor's office crafts fiscally responsible contracts in his negotiations, because ultimately, you know, that is going to set off in a direction in which it will be much harder, obviously, to fall within the constraints of the spending caps that we've put in place in the 2017 budget, and at the same time invest in the areas that we need to invest in for the people of the state. So ultimately, it comes down to prioritization. And I would always argue, and I think many in the Senate Republican caucus would argue, that we'll do a far better job prioritizing, assisting municipalities, educational spending, child care spending, those areas that are really touching the people of the state of Connecticut on a daily basis, as opposed to, you know, to continuing to fund and increase bureaucracy and the growth of our state government, which I think can frankly be limited in a much more efficient manner. So that would be my argument in terms of looking at areas to make our state government run far more efficiently and utilize any savings in those areas to properly invest in the social services and the other areas of our budgets that directly impact the residents on a daily basis.
Higher education is one sector, one group that has not been happy with their funding in the current budget, and they've been very loud about wanting more funding for the remainder of this budget and also for future years as they consider tuition hikes and also cuts to the services that are being offered, especially if they don't get the money that they're requesting. And I've heard the number that they're looking for $250 million to bail out the current lacking money in the system. So how do you guys work to find some kind of a solution there, especially when they're very loud about their challenges?
No, absolutely. And we as a caucus, and myself included, strongly believe in the higher education system we have here in the state of Connecticut. We have a lot of great resources that we're providing students across the state, particularly our robust community college system, et cetera, that does provide great opportunities for our residents and for our students throughout the state. You know, however, I think before we look at increasing those budget allotments for those areas, we need to get answers for critical questions of the higher education system in the state. A lot of these higher education systems that we find, particularly here in Connecticut, are very administrative top heavy. And I just talked about finding efficiency in our state government and not necessarily continuing to funnel the bureaucracy of our state government and looking at areas to invest in which it touches the residents of the state and prioritizing that over funneling the bureaucracy. And I think the higher education system is a great example of that. Before we, you know, look at potentially increasing the budget allotment for them, we need to take a look at how they're looking to plan to create efficiencies in their budget, particularly as it relates to administrative costs, whether it be, you know, additional chancellors, additional administrators, looking at the areas of the top-heavy management costs that are related to our college system and our higher in the state of Connecticut, and finding ways to find efficiencies there first before we even have another discussion about allotting more money that we're trying to stay within a fiscal spending cap on directly to that system. So I think we the people of the state of Connecticut, Republicans, we the House Republicans, we believe that we deserve answers on efficiency questions before we consider an additional investment in that area.
There are also reports that enrollment is down at the state colleges and universities as well. Does that weigh in on the decision?
I don't know if it's necessarily enrollment. I think one of the things that we should be looking at, and one of the questions we should be asking, similar to the way of finding efficiencies within the administrative aspects of the higher educational system here in our state, is enrollment and how those statistics are collected. My understanding is some of the shifts have been made in terms of a student going to one particular school, but then having access online to other universities or colleges within the state. And that may adjust to some of the numbers. So, you know, I've spoken with different community colleges, and they've raised concerns about students that are truly actually enrolled in their colleges, but they're counting towards other systems or other community colleges because they're taking some online courses there. So, you know, in full transparency, we need to find out, you know, what the enrollment numbers are truly are, and I think that's part of the overall evaluation process we need to make and consider. Again, before we look at increasing any.
While we continue to talk about funding requests, Governor Lamont has requested the state legislature to approve $45 million to go toward early childhood education. The Connecticut Education Association is saying $36 million would come from money set aside for K through 12 schools so the state can ultimately, they say, subsidize child care. And Democrats also seem to have a level of disagreement on that particular issue. Where do Senate Republicans fall?
I mean, I think that it comes down to prioritization. And again, we appreciate the fact that the governor is understands and is respecting the fiscal guardrails, as we talked about at the beginning of this discussion. But one of the things that that is important to us is ensuring that the educations across the 169 towns in our state and some of the regionalized school districts as well are made whole. So, you know, one of the bigger problems with cutting the educational spending, as noble as the cause may be towards other areas of the budget, is that a lot of the towns in the budgets that were passed, that was passed last year, was promised an increase in excess cost funding, an increase in ECS funding. Because of some of the regulatory changes that were made related to special education in the state, we're seeing that pot of money significantly reduced. So most school districts, if not all school districts throughout the state, have actually seen a reduction in what they received the year before CS and XX costs. This year's budget, I think there's going to be an effort, I'm sure, on the part of many in the legislature on both sides of the aisle to rectify those lost in funding to those towns. Because as we all know, allotment to the educational system from the state of Connecticut, that's simply just going to get passed down to our constituents in property tax increases, which is one of the biggest drivers of individuals, you know, leaving the state, frankly. So we have to be mindful of that fact, and stripping away educational funding, particularly from our local districts, from the state of Connecticut, is something that we as a caucus are always going to question. So we're going to have to see some more of those numbers and how taking some of the educational funds and spending it in other areas.
My guest this morning on Face Connecticut, Republican Senate Leader Stephen Harding of Brookfield, who recently assumed that position as leader of that caucus. And continuing to talk about a variety of issues, and we can't get to all of them, but I'm trying to hit some of the big ones, Senator. Democrats have seemed pretty quiet recently, Senator Harding, about the 2035 electric vehicle mandate, and I don't know exactly what that means. Last I heard, they were kind of looking into what could be done about it, and it's been pretty radio silent ever since. What are you hearing about it?
I'm hearing that it's still very possible that this might be pushed forward as legislation. If you can remember, Morgan, back in the fall and early winter back in December, the governor's office and DEEP pushed forward a regulation, which was the California emission standards, which, as you mentioned, would have banned the sale of non-EV vehicles starting in 2035. That regulation, fortunately, did not move forward. Thanks very much to the office of the the works of the Senate Republicans, particularly under Senator Kelly's leadership in that regard. That was one of his big successes that we're looking to advance on. What we're seeing now is an effort by many in the majority to push forward a legislation this time that would pass potentially Environment Committee or Transportation Committee, and then pass, you know, look at the proponents would look to pass through the House, Senate, and signed by the governor through a legislative process. So I think there are many in the majority, as I mentioned, that are looking, instead of just passing it as a regulation, to take that same exact regulatory language and pass it as legislation this time. And myself and my colleagues in the Senate Republican Caucus are absolutely still against that effort, despite the fact that it's legislation as opposed to regulation. The same exact reasons we were against the regulation to begin with. Senator Kelly often coined it as the ban without a plan. That's still very much the case. We still have yet to get any answers at all from those that are promoting this bill on how they would actually implement the electricity to implement something like this, how they would actually get enough stock and supply of EV vehicles in the to make this possible, how they would implement the infrastructure to have enough charging stations for this. And one of the biggest things, Morgan, that was the most alarming to me when I heard this was that in order to get a battery the size you would need to have the current capacity of a tractor trailer, there's no suspension bridge in the United States of America that could take on the weight of what one of these batteries would weigh. So these are all basic questions that would impact the daily lives of residents and small businesses across our state that we have yet to get one answer on, yet individuals continue to push this ban now as legislation as opposed to regulation. So it's the same fight that we're going to take to the Senate floor as Senate Republicans, and we're going to continue that fight because we believe it's simply impractical policy for the people of our state. And it's also very unaffordable policy for that matter as well.
We have completely gone through the half hour just about, but my final question for you, Senate Republican leader Stephen Harding, is about elections that are upcoming, because you have 12 Republicans, 24 majority Democrats, and at least your goal obviously is to maintain that number, if not grow it. And yet we see that there are some tough races. I mean, there's Senator Tony Huang who's facing some competition. So what's your strategy for supporting the 12 that you have now, maintaining that number, possibly even growing it?
Well, I think one of the things is making sure that the incumbent senators all have any and all resources necessary to win their races. I can tell every single one of the 12 incumbent senators that we have that are running for re-election are incredible, incredible advocates for their district. And every and have earned re-election many times over. So I am confident that they will be able to run. Their constituents will see what they've done for the state of Connecticut, and particularly what they've done for their districts, and versus necessary are going to be provided to securing their reelection. One, because their districts deserve it. They are incredible senators for their districts. And I think if they get out, they can get their message across doing the aspects of retail politics to get reelected. And all the individuals in the Senate Republican Caucus, in my opinion, are incredible. Incredible they do a great job of meeting the voters face to face, hearing their concerns, genuinely understanding their constantly advocating for their constituency on a daily basis up here in Hartford. So it's going to be providing any resources necessary to make sure that they're reelected. Their districts and the state will be better for that. And then also sure that we have a unified message, particularly with the House Republicans as well across our state, to message across our state for even some of our challenging candidates in other incumbent Democrat districts to secure victories there as well.
Thank you so much for coming on Face Connecticut with me this morning, our new Republican State Senate leader, Stephen Harding. I'm sure we'll have many more conversations to come.
Look forward to it, Morgan. Thank you for having me.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
from the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.